駆け抜ける非常階段瞳の群れが Sun of the Times 探してる目がくらみそうな青いダイヤもガラスに変わってしまう気をつけろ急げ自分を信じて
Heavy Lonely Night
闇の中から答えを見つけ出せ宇宙を全部くれたって譲れない愛もあぐ何が本当か何が嘘かわからない時もある見つめ合うだけじゃ朝は遠すぎる抱きしめたい今夜だけ火をつけろ
Only lonely light
夜を休め体の口まで
Heavy lonely night
二度と心は後ろを振り向くな
Welcome back everyone, it's June 15th, 2014. We are currently lounging and relaxing in Adrian's spacious living room. I've got the Macross Speaker Podcast crew with me. So I am Richard, aka Goobaba. Next to me is the sometime host of this podcast, Tochiro, also known as Gwen.
Hey, otherwise known as Gwen, but my real name's Tochiro for today.
Right. And on the other side of me, we've got Renato. Say hello, Renato.
Hello, Renato.
And over here we have Adrian, Save.
Hey.
And we have a couple of special guests today, so please introduce yourselves.
Hello, I'm Jason, otherwise known as Jason C.
Sometimes Jasnik.
Yeah, that one too.
Jasnik, oh god.
There's always an original name for me somewhere.
He's a very special listener.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
And next to Jason, we have...
his wife, Cher, sometimes known as Reflex Point, but mainly Cher.
Is that a handle or just a nickname?
That was my handle on Robotech.com and Macross World.
Okay.
But barely go on the Macross World off and on, so...
Well, welcome to the show, guys, and, you know, being two Macross fans, especially... Jason, I mean, I know you've got a fairly big presence on both Macross World and I see around on the Facebook pages and whatnot, but we heard you're in Japan, and when all Macross fans come to Japan, they end up here somehow. It's funny how that works.
Because we have such a spacious living room.
But look, welcome to Tokyo, welcome to Japan.
Thank you.
So what brings you guys here? What are you up to?
Well, basically just, you know, had some spare time. Cheryl and I hadn't gone on vacation, a real vacation, since 2010, so figured it was time, and cool. I had always wanted to come out here, but just never had the money or the time.
Is it your first time here?
First time.
Wow, okay.
So it's been an experience, definitely an experience.
So, I mean, how are you finding Japan overall, then?
I love it. I mean, I've been able to go to a few, you know, house parties, and it's great, kind of getting a feel of just regular living, you know, along with the touristy stuff.
Right. You know. So far, what's the highlight for you guys?
Kyoto, I guess.
Seeing
all the more of the ancient, you know, sites and getting more of the historical aspect was pretty cool.
Yeah, I was looking at your photographs on Facebook, and you went to the Golden Pavilion and the places as well, right? And it looks like the weather was really nice when you went, wasn't it?
It was actually overcast, and it was a little spotty with rain at times, but when we got to that location, you know, we just started snapping pictures, and, you know, when we were looking back at them, they just came out so great.
Okay, that's good.
So, I mean, they'll be on my desktop forever, probably.
So, yeah, I mean, any angle that you take of the Golden Pavilion and all sorts of the other temples over there just make the photographs look fantastic, even if you're a complete amateur.
Yeah, really good.
I mean, you can't go wrong.
Yeah, there are like a limited number of places you can take photos there. Though, like everyone seems to have one of about two or three angles.
Everyone seems to have the same angle. Yeah, but that's
because I know that
there's a path.
Yeah, that recent Tekken CG movie, they have a fight in one of the best photo spots. And I was like, hey, I took a photo there in 1993. Now there's a flying panda doing kung fu there.
You have to bring Tekken into it.
But so the more important question, guys, is what Macross merchandise have you brought while you've been here?
That's more important.
More important.
Yeah, it's more important than the Golden Pavilion.
He's bought the majority of it, so I've been good for... I was looking at cells, but realized that a lot of the Macross cells were a bit out of my budget, so...
A bit out of anyone's budget.
Yeah. No.
Unless you like Basara.
I haven't come across Basara yet.
Well, I bought one of Basara for $1,500 the other day.
Wow, okay.
It's the one where he's throwing the apple. To Milan, and Milan is supposed to give it to Gamelin, and Gamelin says, you know, Gamelin is not the type of person who just bites into a whole apple, and then the very next scene, Gamelin is biting into a whole apple. Everyone's like, who cares? It's a very iconic moment for me.
I'm trying to catalog the episodes and find where that's at in my head. Most of what I bought was, I'd probably say the good portion of it was just CDs. I mean, went into, what was it, Book Off, or where was it? Was it Mandarake that we went?
Oh, it was Nakano Broadway, Mandarake.
Yeah, went there and just found a bunch of CDs that I probably have all the songs for on other CDs, but I was like, well, you know, I don't have this one, so I'll get this. And they were, the prices were just too good to pass up. So,
And they're easy to bring back home as well.
Exactly, unlike the posters that I bought, which... Yeah. I'm going to have to figure out the logistics of getting those back, but...
Right. Jason, I know you've got a long history with Macross, and, you know, we love having fans and new faces come on the cast, and, you know, to just talk to them about their history with the franchise, how they got into it, what they're doing as part of the fandom, etc. So, to kick off here, I mean, you want to tell us about how you first got introduced to Macross? Like, take us back.
Okay. Well... I guess it started in probably close to summer 1984. I had a friend in elementary school. I think I was 9 at the time. And every once in a while, I'd go over to his house, and you know, we'd just play with our toys that we would bring over, Transformers, whatever, G.I. Joe toys. And then one day I go over to his house and he's like, hey, my dad brought over a bunch of movies from Japan and TV shows. You want to watch a couple? And so I'm, okay, yeah, sure. He's like, yeah, you won't see these over here ever. You know, little did I know that would pretty much be, prophecy, but... he pops in this tape, and first show that's on there is Macross. And I'm like, oh, this looks cool. You know, and the opening starts, and from then on, I was just like, oh my God, what is this? I've never seen anything like this. And my friend, his father would bring these tapes over so that he could keep up his Japanese, because his mom was teaching him here in the States. And while his dad was overseas, he would bring him tapes, to entertain him, but at the same time help, his understanding and dialogue.
So your friend was Japanese, but half Japanese?
No, he was full.
Oh, okay.
Full Japanese. And so, here I am watching this, and he's kind of translating what they're saying, what's going on. And I think I ended up watching about half the series, I want to say.
Wow.
just over the course of time, you know, before, was it March 1985?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I started seeing these previews of this thing called Robotech, and I'm kind of, well, is this the same thing? You know, so I thought it was. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, yay, they brought it over, they brought it over. And then after the 36 episodes of Macross, all of a sudden there's this, you know, Southern Cross thing. And I'm, you know, I'm thinking, oh, my friend didn't show me this. What's, you know, he was holding out on me. And so I come up to him, I'm like, hey, how come you didn't show me the rest of it? He's like, well, what do you mean? I'm like, well, there's the continuation. He said, no, that's a different show. And so finally he schools me on what, you know, yeah, this is totally different. They rewrote it differently. I'm like, oh, okay. But, you know, I still liked it, you know, but that was pretty much what kept me going until, I believe it was 1989, which after elementary school, I ended up going to a private school. All my friends, you know, I kind of lost contact with all of them. But when I went back to public school for high school, ended up seeing them all again. And he ends up walking up to me one day and he's like, hey, you still like Macross? I'm like, yeah, kind of. He's like, well, here, watch this. I'm like, what is it? He's like, well, they made a movie of it. I'm like, okay. So I go home, pop it in VCR, and after that, I was just like, oh my God, what have I been missing?
And this is not Clash of the Dinos.
No, this was Japanese. Do You Remember Love?
Roll.
Min-Mei, nudity, everything. I was...
Priorities. The most important.
There was tape circling around before Clash of the Binoids hit.
Yeah.
At least 2 years before you saw them at KB Toy Stores in the clearance bin. So that's how I saw it on some bootleg.
Yeah, because I had a copy of the Japanese edition well before... Well, no, I think one of my friends... soon after saw Clash of the Binoids.
But yeah, I ended up doing what everybody else did with those tapes and basically, you know, took two VCRs from our house, plugged them up together and recorded on it on a fresh tape and kept it for myself.
Right.
Even though I didn't know what they were saying, but, you know, the visuals were just, you know.
Where did you grow up at?
I grew up in Santa Monica, city of Santa Monica, so I went to Santa Monica Elementary School, but by that time we had moved to city of Mar Vista, which is basically 10 minutes southeast of Santa Monica, so I was pretty much a city boy all my
life. Yeah, because a lot of us, the three of us from Southern California, like we grew up without, like at an age where we didn't have cars, so...
The three of you?
Yeah. California? Yeah. California?
Me? No, me.
One, two, three.
Oh, okay.
But
technically four of us.
Four. Because a lot of people in Southern California, especially the Robotech fans, eventually got together at some point later in our lives.
Yeah.
But growing up, I didn't have any friend that was into it as much as I was into it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So,
Neither did I.
What do you mean growing up? I think now you don't have any friends.
Well, we're doing this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't have any normal friends. But, there was people in, when Robotech came out in junior high, I think I was in junior high around the time. 7th grade or something like that. So other classmates were watching it, but once Robotech was over, they didn't really continue to look for anime. They were still watching crap like, you know, Gem and the Holograms and Silverhawks, crap like that. Thundercats, crap like that. Talking about Mask, crap like that. You know, they didn't want to go on and
all of the
crap was my childhood.
Crap was my childhood as well. But all of these shows, as an adult, you watch the opening, then you turn it off.
Right.
Yeah. As long as he's not ripping on Ulysses 31, I'm fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
They didn't want to, educate themselves and go further, deeper into Japanese anime. They got what they needed and they left. So.
Yeah. Oddly enough, I think that was kind of like my last kind of hurrah for really watching cartoons for a long time. And then, you know, and then after I saw Do You Remember Love in high school, I was like, oh, that's cool. But, you know, I didn't really pursue a whole lot of other things. I kind of knew of other shows that were being done, and but never really followed it. And then, you know, you just kind of grow up. You kind of forget all that stuff. You know, get into trouble in college and all sorts of other things that I will not discuss on this podcast. But, you know, it finally took me, God, till I was maybe about 30 to finally start realizing that there was so much more out there.
Mm-hmm.
And
what was it that triggered that? I mean, what brought you back into the fold?
You know, I think it was just a combination of just kind of getting tired of, I mean, I used to party a whole lot. I used to get into a lot of trouble, and I just got kind of burned out on doing all that stuff, and, you know, just blowing money everywhere, and was just kind of like, okay, well, like, you know,
a born again Macross fan.
Yeah, pretty much. It was, I don't, you know, I just remember waking up one day thinking, you know what, I really miss some things from my childhood. And I was like, you know, just kind of reflecting on all the things I used to enjoy, and I was like, you know, I remember I wanted that toy, and I remember I used to watch this show, and it just kind of all came back. And then I started looking online, and there was all this stuff, and
right.
It was just kind of like an open field.
Yeah, but I think a lot of us went through that, like especially around college. You know, a lot of people had given up on things, you know, left things behind, grown out of things. But then I guess maybe college time is a very reflective time when you're out of adolescence, and so you start longing for things which were much simpler. And so that, you know, it's not a coincidence that you start to get the adult collector market actually form at around this time.
Right.
Yeah. So we're probably like the first generation to have that kind of nostalgia market. Yeah. And there are now products targeted directly at us. So, you know, you're not alone in those sentiments, I think. I mean, I don't know about you guys. But
well, yeah. Like. And also, I think a lot of it was that in the early 90s, there just wasn't much anime that was terribly interesting. Like,
well, Micros 2.
Yeah.
Bubblegum Crisis.
That had ended by 80s. Then. That had ended by then.
No, I didn't get to the States till the 90s, though.
Oh, well, I'm talking about in Japan.
Oh, okay. In Japan, yeah.
Because most of the stuff that got on TV was very kid-oriented.
Yeah.
So I was still getting, like, New Type and Animedia, like, every few months, but looking through them, it was just, there was just nothing that looked interesting. Most of the new material that they were covering, and this was, like, 1991, 92, most of it seemed very, kid-friendly, and so, yeah, I just kind of got out of it for a while.
Yeah, TV shows kind of dialed down on the hardcoreness all the way until maybe like Escaflowne Evangelion,
right?
But that's because the OVA market exploded in the mid 80s,
right?
So Megazone 2-3 is really like the turning point for that,
and then
Evangelion brings it back,
right?
So yeah, I mean, it was like a brief period of kid-oriented stuff, and that's kind of why Macro 7 is the way it is as well.
Right. Yeah, and now, of course, we've got, like, kiddie stuff during the day, and then everything else kind of ghettoized at 2 a.m.
Well, during the day, you have the stuff for kids, and during the evening, you have the stuff about kids.
Right.
No, there's a lot of really kiddie cartoons that should not be on at that night, at that time, I think.
Yeah.
Number one being Captain Earth. That is such a childish show, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's on like 11:30 at night, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, Macross
11:30 a.m.
Macross Frontier was on at like 2 a.m., wasn't it?
Yeah, but that wasn't as childish as Captain Earth.
No, it's not. But it did. I don't think there was any need for it to be.
2 only in Kawamori's mind that it wanted it 25:25.
25 o'clock is a thing.
25 o'clock is it was 1 a.m. 25 minutes past 25, and so 25th anniversary.
There's the gag, and then there's taking it too far.
Yeah,
49 episodes of Macross 7, 7x7.
Fair enough, but let's bring this back around. Let's bring this back around. So, you were looking to get back into this stuff, Jason, and was there a single title that grabbed you? Renato, you mentioned Macross Plus. I know a lot of people seem to have gone on this kind of hike.
No, I did.
Oh, sorry. Renato, your name is Richard. Macross Plus seemed to have brought a lot of people back into the fold. Was it Macross Plus that did that for you, Jason, or was it just a general game back into anime kind of thing?
You know, I remember this specifically. I was at work, of all places, and at the time I worked in IT, so, you know, we had, you know, if there were no computers broken, there was time to just jump on the net and whatever. So I'm just there doing a few things, and all of a sudden I wonder if there's any more Macross out there. So I, you know, just do like a, I do a search on Yahoo, and I find, you know, I find this site called Macross World. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. Let me go look inside of it. And I started looking through like the collections of DVDs and or VHS tapes, or, and I just start seeing all these other things. And I see this Macross 2. I'm like, oh, they made it. They made it too? Okay, I'll have to get that.
No, they didn't.
Someone else did, yeah.
And so, and then I see this Macross 7. I'm like, wait, so where's 3, 4, 5, and 6? So for the longest time, I'm trying to find all these in-between ones. and then I find the boards, and I'm like, okay, well, I'll sign up, check it out. And, you know, that's when, I find out that there's, you know, Plus, and there's, you know, 2. And that kind of just opened my eyes. And then at the same time, they had the old Yamato 172 YF-19. Mm. And I was like...
So it's interesting. You didn't know that Plus had come out officially in the States then?
I had no clue.
That's interesting.
I wasn't really looking for anime, per se. I was just kind of exploring, like, all, you know...
In my case, it was a friend that recommended it to me. I didn't know about it either. Oh, no, I did. How did I... Because I watched, like, the Pat Labor movie, and that was...
Are you tying this into all the... Because for me, it was the manga entertainment commercials.
Because, yeah, right. That's what I mean. Before the Pat Labor movie, they had the previews,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And on that...
The manga effect.
Well, it wasn't that in the UK. It was something else. I know in the US it was manga!
Manga! Yes.
Because I had an imported video as well. But yeah, I mean, I saw this preview and I thought, oh, that looks interesting. Yeah. Odd.
And they also had that stuff. Really long Wings of Onimusha.
Mm-hmm.
Wings of Onimusha trailer, which...
Oh, did it?
Yeah. There's Plus, there's Onimusha, there's Fist of the North Star.
Yeah.
And then there was that combined one, which was like... It had
clips of everything.
Clips of everything. Venus Wars was in there as well.
Venus Wars was in there, yeah. Well, that looks really good. Even now. Anyway, my friend said, you should check out this show, Macross Plus. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I check it out, and I'm hooked. And so I'm getting all the videos. Number 4 doesn't come out in the UK for the longest time, so I get my uncle to import it.
It didn't come out in the US for a long time either.
Okay. But it had already come out in the US when I was... Not when I started watching it, but like I knew when it came out. And so I got my uncle to import it, and I watched it, and I thought it was amazing. Except for the ending, which was kind of... And then I went back to my friend, and I said, you know, I watched the series. It was, man, fantastic. And my friend said, yeah, I only watched the first episode. I'm like, wait, what the... What? Yeah, I just lost interest. So there you go.
Yeah, it took me a while to really like start getting into anime, and like around the same time that I was on Macross World, I also kind of signed up for Robotech.com, you know, because that, you know, because I understood what that story was about.
Yeah.
You know, obviously because it was in English, I just, you know, I kind of got heavily into that for a while, and at the same time was just kind of looking at all this other stuff around. And I think the first series that I bought after Macross 2, because I did buy that, and it didn't feel the same, but I think the other one I bought after that, I think was, oh god, Rossifon.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, oh, this is cool. I don't understand it too much, but it's cool.
So this is the 2000s now.
Yeah, this is 2000s. And then I would just start looking, you know, I'd go to Best Buy and I'd just start looking at titles and just kind of whatever, you know, whatever had robots in it, I was like, I was, you know, I would buy it.
Right.
Just so I could see something cool. And that pretty much kicked off everything. That, you know, I started slowly getting into different types of anime, and next thing I know, I'm just, you know, here I am.
So was there a turning point that, because I know you're fairly, if you excuse the term, hardcore Macross fan / collector, as you've just traveled to Japan and spent half a day buying secondhand Macross CDs at a bookshop, so I think I'm somewhat justified in making that claim. What was there a turning point that brought you this much into the fandom, as opposed to randomly buying robot series from Best Buy?
You know, I think I can probably attribute most of it just to that day in 1984 when my friend popped in that videotape. I mean, I remember that so clearly, being just, you know, so surprised that something so good was on a screen that I can watch. Mm-hmm. You know, and the story was great. And so later on, you know, early 2000s, it was just like, you know, yeah, I want to feel that way again. I want to get back into that stuff. And slowly but surely, you know, as merchandise was coming out, it was just like, okay, you know what? All the stuff that I could, that my mom would not let me buy or wouldn't buy me.
Right.
Now, you know, I have the money to buy myself. You know, I'm going to go all out on this. And that's exactly what I did and still do today.
Yeah.
So before we get into Frontier then, Cheryl. Mm-hmm. How did you get involved in this madness? Did he drag you into it? I hope not.
No. We met separately at via Robotech.com parties, like the barbecue see-through bit. Well, in terms of anime, it's like I would go to my grandparents' place, watch the local Japanese channel, and watch Candy, Kimba, all those old shows.
Channel 18?
Huh? Channel 18, yep. Yes. Okay. The original Gold Rangers.
Wow.
And then later on, that's how old I am. Later on, of course, then whatever was syndicated, Battle of the Planets. And yes, I watched crap like Thundercats and Silverhawks. Voltron.
It's all coming back on you.
Oh, no, admission is part of the cure, so.
So, in 85, I was in 8th grade, and that's when Robotech came out. I wasn't familiar with Macross at the time, so my first introduction was Robotech.
Okay.
Then 9th grade, my church group went to Hawaii, and then went to Borders Bookstore for some reason, and my friend found all those small little, the books, the Macross art books.
Oh, man.
Mm. She bought them, and I noticed one. I'm like, wait, this looks different. It was a Do You Remember Love book. And I was heavily into animation. That was something I actually wanted to become, was an animator. Later, didn't go that route, became a graphic designer. But I remember seeing, like, where does this come from? Didn't know about Do You Remember Love, and that was my introduction to it. Unfortunately, my finally saw it. It was Clash of the Bionoids.
Oh, yeah.
So I never saw the original Japanese version until much, much later.
That's the other thing I wanted to talk about. I can talk about it later if you like. But I finally tracked down another copy, because you have a copy of the dub on Laserdisc, which we talked about the previous podcast.
Yes.
Right? I found one. So I saw part of it the other day for the first time in about 20 years. and it all came screaming back at me. I never remembered that line that that Shami has, which is, "I bet she has a lot of jacks."
That's what comes from being a star.
And it was like, like such a pleasurable nails on chalkboard sound. There is no experience like it. Yeah, Clash of Bones. Thank you for reminding me.
Well, for me, unlike Jason, who got away completely away from the anime scene, once I got into college, I worked part-time, and all the money I earned, I would go to Suncoast Video, and they had tons of anime on VHS. And that's when I would buy them. So Macross 2, I have Macross Plus, everything from Wicked City, Ninja Scroll, I bought a whole slew, and then went to Blockbuster to rent a bunch. Watch it with my mom, of all things.
You watch Wicked City with your mother?
Yes.
All right, Jason! All right!
There's a funnier story. When I was 30, my friends, all this time, liked anime, Fushigi Yugi, then into Kenshin later on, but when I turned 30, my friends, as a joke, bought me cool devices. Okay? Watch part of that with my mom, too, to the horror of my younger brother, who's like, "What the hell are you guys doing?" That's another story.
Oh, for what it's worth, back in the day, my grandmother really liked the end of Ninja Scroll. "Genma, rot in your golden hell!" Like, she had a violent streak, I guess.
See, we should be making anime for grandparents.
Don't start on this again.
What is it then, like, since you guys have been together Macross-wise, you've watched some stuff together. Have you gone back and watched older stuff together, or have you mostly watched newer stuff like Frontier together, or...?
Well, you showed me Macross 7, because it wasn't until I joined the group, I wasn't really familiar with Macross 7, and we saw Zero, the first time I'm not sure about you, the first time I saw Zero was when Steve Yeun was downloading it illegally, and showed it at one of the parties. Sure. That's how I first saw the first episode of Macross Zero.
Oh my god.
Thank you, Steve Yeun.
Yeah, that's how I saw The Incredibles.
Steve Yeun downloaded it?
I was at a Robotech barbecue and he brought it on his laptop. I got to see The Incredibles.
That guy has a massive collection of
He does.
Pirated stuff.
So, not to get too off topic, but let's quickly talk about Zero. What did you guys think of it? Because it's something that doesn't get... Zero for me seems to be the way Seven was about 5-6 years ago. Everyone either hates it or doesn't want to talk about it. But
I'm different from... I like Seven because of the music.
Okay.
It is repetitive, but I enjoyed it. Zero, it was hard for me to get into, frankly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know Jason likes it a lot better.
Well, for the record, I do like what they did with the Zero design. I love that. The story... I thought it was a little too... maybe too gritty and too serious, and then along with the whole nature thing, it just made a very weird combination for me.
Mm-hmm. This is a weird combination for me right here. Someone from the English-speaking fandom saying it's too gritty.
Well, I mean, I'll be honest. After watching, because I did watch Seven before that, and you know, around that time that I was watching Seven, I started watching all these other series, you know, because ADV, Funimation was just... they were throwing everything out there during that time.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I started watching other genres that were out of the whole mecha robot. And so I was kind of, you know, I was kind of not really into things that were so, you know, blood all over the place. And not that I don't enjoy watching some of that stuff, but, you know, after a while, you kind of want to explore a little. So... When Zero came out, I love the Valkyries in it. I love the Zero. I love the SV-51, but the story it didn't really click with me that well. And the only character that I actually liked was Mal.
Hmm. Well, at least.
Oh, and Roy, you can never complain about him, but. Other than that, it was just kind of...
It's funny, because Roy didn't actually do anything in the story. It was not
intentional. No, he defused a mine.
A landmine. A mine which didn't need to be there. Like, The show was originally planned as a four-parter. They added the fifth one after the initial announcement. And I'm not sure what Roy's role was to begin with. But if you remember, the original promotional art had him and Shin together. And then somebody photoshopped Roy out of it and photoshopped Edgar in the same picture later on. So there's two different versions. It is kind of weird. We don't know what he's doing in there other than driving up sales.
Can't disagree.
No.
I mean, more Fokker is...
is always
good
better.
Fokker.
Yeah.
So, Cheryl, I've got to ask, because we just heard this big spiel from Jason here over what it was, I guess, about Macross that grabbed him and that first experience. I mean, it sounds like you're into a lot of different anime from mm-hmm. a relatively young age. What was it specifically about Macross that appealed to you? Was there any one element or any key moment that was it?
I mean, again, I was more exposed to Macross from Robotech, how I kind of think of it. Yeah. I mean, Do You Remember Love, to this day, is to me still stands the test of time in terms of the animation quality. That's what I was really into, was the drawing, the animation. I just remember seeing just the pictures in that book in Hawaii, then finally seeing Clash of the Bionoids despite the dubbing. Just looking at the visuals, and that's what caught my eye.
So it was Jet Jockey in action.
Yeah, just watching Jet Jockey in action. Yeah.
So I have a confession to make. I've yet to watch the Macross TV series, the original TV series in Japanese.
Huh.
I just know it as Robotech, so haven't had a chance to do that yet.
All right, quick, Adrian, you grab her, I'll open the door.
We did start watching the ADV dub, and not stand that. So,
but I mean, you can switch the
you can.
The reason why I bought those was because my Animego CDs, you know, they were really thin quality DVDs, the inside spindle part on my first one started cracking.
Yeah,
and so I was like, you know, I'm not going to put the other ones through this.
Yeah.
So when ADV announced that they were going to, you know, make this dub and everything, I was like, and then I found out that it had the original Japanese. I was like, okay, I'll buy them.
Yeah.
And I did, and I tried to watch, you know, I think I watched the first disc dub,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, it was just so horrible.
Sky Squadron!
I couldn't
Everyone's
do it.
Everyone's screaming.
There's modern anime dubbing sensibilities.
Yeah.
I'm presuming the most recent thing you've seen, well, the most recent thing any of us have seen, of course, is the most recent thing that was made, which would be...
FB7.
Macross 30. No. Frontier. It's always interesting we get a wide gamut of responses from fans to Frontier, whether it be old-school fans who are initially put off by a lot of the designs, or newer fans who are brought into the fold by the music. Pre-existing fans of the franchise, when you first saw Frontier, what sort of impression did it leave on you? What did you think?
First episode was amazing. Just the animation, everything was amazing. And to me, Frontier is behind, aside from Do You Remember Love, it's my favorite Macross show.
Wow.
Is just,
at a very high level, what is it that...
It's a combination, animation. Yes, it has a lot of tributes to the various different series, but it's the characters. It does fall back. There is the love triangle, but that formula did work back in the original Macross. It's a nice balance of action, you know, drama, humor, for me.
Holistic?
Music, of course, music.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So Alto. Let's talk Alto.
I'm not big on Alto.
Mm-hmm. Not big on Alto?
No, I like Michael. Mikhail.
Well, he is a ladies' man.
But I don't know. I'm not against Alto, but I'm not like Alto, you know. So.
Not like the people who are at the Alto birthday.
Oh yeah.
In Osaka.
So Jason, Frontier comes out. What crosses your mind when that first episode?
I remember when they had the, I guess that first episode in December 2008.
Yeah.
And
that was my birthday.
I had heard it was out, And then I remember Cheryl and I being at Disneyland, and my friend sends me a text saying, "Oh, it's up. You can download it." And I was like, I'm like, "Oh, okay." So as soon as I get home, I download it. I go to sleep. I wake up the next morning. I watch it, and my first impression of it was, I want to say it was pretty similar to watching Do You Remember Love? And I know that might be kind of stretching it a bit, but, mm-hmm. you know, just the fact that there was a brand new series and I was actually into anime at the time when it was coming out. So it was all like, okay, I'm in with this, you know, mm-hmm. as it's going.
You experience it real time.
Yeah. yeah. And so I'll be honest, I was pretty hooked on it. My first impression of some of the characters, though, Cheryl, I thought she was a bitch.
Yeah.
I could not stand that character.
She was. I was like,
I hope she disappears in this series. But yeah, but by episode 5, I was like, I love her, and if they make anything related to her, I'm going to buy it.
Lucky you.
Hence again, the financial drain that is exactly. buying Macross Frontier merchandise.
But I loved it. I loved everything about it. I know there's some people that complain that, oh, there's too many homages to, you know, some of the other series, but I think that's what keeps fans going, and it's what keeps new fans, you know, possibly wanting to go back and review some of the older stuff that they may have missed when they were, you know, either before they were born or, you know, when they were too young to really remember.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I know there's a balance between, you know, entertainment and doing what is going to make money. And I think they did a great job with it. You know, they had a great marketing team. They had a great, you know, production team. I'm almost 40 and I love it. So, you know, they did something right.
Yeah. What about the Zero references and how they connected it to Zero to make Zero make a little bit more sense? Because you're saying you didn't like the nature stuff and the kind of...
Oddly enough, while I wasn't a big fan of Zero, after watching the, you know, that episode where they reference Zero, mm-hmm. I actually liked that episode more than all of Zero.
So the Legend of Zero was better than Zero itself. The Legend is
perfect. Yeah. No, I'm not saying I dislike Zero, because there were some aspects of it that I did like, but I think that kind of, yeah, it did help make sense out of it, and it made it kind of watchable.
Is there any Macross that you dislike?
Flashback 7.
Okay. FB7. Okay.
Yeah, I bought that Blu-ray, and it was the one thing that I'll probably kick myself over buying. But the extras look interesting. They look more interesting than the actual.
Yeah, the extras are great. Yeah.
The unexpected.
Cheryl, how about you?
Nothing really. Mm-hmm. But my least favorite is probably Zero.
Mm-hmm.
Yes!
Yes, I like Macross 2 better than Zero.
Oh, no, I thought you guys had forgotten about Macross 2, right?
No, the whole reason they're even in Japan is because of Macross 2.
We'll get to that. Okay, so of course, as you said, with Frontier, Cheryl merchandise, I mean, it's completely true, I think, to say that Frontier has more merchandise than
anything.
Probably all of Macross combined.
Yeah,
that's preceded it. So,
and more original, like merchandise from other shows from older Macross shows has come out solely because of Frontier.
Yeah, Richard's right. Because of Macross, we've gotten more reissued merchandise. We've gotten new companies getting licenses from older merchandise and putting stuff out because there was that big Frontier wave at the time. Which pushed other things.
So how is your collection... How does it look now compared to pre-Frontier? Is it...
I want to say it's actually probably doubled. I was not really into figures all that much. I mean, if there was one that just really stood out, you know, for even if I didn't know the anime or didn't know what series it was from, if it looked really good, I would buy it. But after Frontier, I just, you know, I started buying more of these figures and these statues, and next thing you know, it's right. You know, my goal is, once we move into our house, is to have one Detolf case full of Cheryl.
Full of Cheryl?
Not this one sitting next to me, but...
he loves me more than me.
Well, that's
something... You've got two Cheryls in your life.
Yeah, that's something we
need. One day you might need to pick.
I don't think that'll be a problem.
No, really? He just buys another Detolf. He'll be all right. But look, apart from merchandise, then I know that you're involved in some other aspects. For example, music.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
Oh yeah, sure. I have a few friends that we've met over the years, actually through Robotech.com. Some of them were, you know, Macross fans probably before I was. You know, one day, you know, we would throw parties every once in a while, either at my house when Tom was living over with me, or at my friend Joe and Vivian. We would go to their house and, you know, parties would be thrown over there. And just one day, you know, they were like, oh yeah, you play guitar, I used to play drums. And, you know, one of our other friends, Brian, he's like, well, yeah, I play bass. And so it was just kind of like, oh, hey, why don't we just try playing some stuff? And next thing you know, we were, you know, trying to pick up some songs and learn how to play them all together. And pretty much it was just like a house party band,
right?
But you know, yeah, we called ourselves Booby Trap. As you can probably guess where that came from.
Yeah, that's a great name, because it works even if you don't know Macross.
Yes, it does.
Spelled backwards as Party Boob, too, so I mean, you can't go wrong. You really can't.
Oh my god! How did I go 32 years without knowing that? Yeah.
Anyways.
But yeah, so... you know, originally we just started off doing like a few 80s covers, and we kind of branched off and started doing like some more modern, newer music. And then, you know, we started adding more people in the group, and,
you know,
and we all like anime, so we were just like, well, hey, why don't we maybe try and do some Macross songs? So we started practicing for a while, you know, learning some Macross songs, mostly, you know, a lot of the Firebomber stuff.
Right.
We haven't all performed it together, but, you know, it is out there. And, you know, once we actually start practicing again, I think we're hoping to start getting some of those together. Mm. It would be nice for Macross World if we could actually get the band to maybe do a few covers. Cool.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can have Norge then do Macross.
Yeah, and Norge is a great singer. He was the pretty much the announcer for Macross World last year at the convention. Oh,
yeah.
He was dressed up as
Hikaru in his pilot suit.
Please let me be in your band.
Come on in.
He was dressed.
Let me just do one song.
It was a Fan Racer Hikaru, right?
Yeah.
Well, in 2010 at Macross World, he won the karaoke competition, the scene competition. He's really good.
So I know the one title we didn't talk much about, guys, was definitely Macross 2, but we're going to get into that in a moment. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Kiss.
So... Firebomber 2014, Basara Explosion. Basara Explode You once again. There has been a lot of controversy surrounding the status of Chie Kajiura recently, because, as we've talked about in previous podcasts, Milene Knight ended this year,
with a whimper rather than a bang, right? Remember they had that small kind of just karaoke, her basically singing karaoke songs.
It was reborn then.
And then, yeah, and then later on in the evening at a technically separate but basically just a continuation event, Animania, she, you know, she did what she usually does under Millennium Night. So it's okay. But I'm getting the feeling that Big Wes is really not very happy about all that. And we have gotten word that she is actually not very pleased with the way that Big Wes has been treating her.
Well, when you say we have gotten word, the entire world got word. Anyone who wanted to access her blog?
No, because I looked on her blog just now and that post is not there.
Really?
Yeah.
Deleted?
No. I don't know. I was going to show Richard, and then we went to her website, and it's not on there, unless I'm just not looking at something that's right in my face. So I went back to the original link to the blog post, which was embedded in an email which was given away on the mailing list that you and I are on. Right? So that's how I knew about it the first time. Oh, no, I lie. I knew about it the first time because Hisame, whom you have interviewed.
Yes, that would
and
be going
you're
out
you're looking at me
sometime.
Like this, like I should not be name-dropping her, but here we go. She revealed to the world this thing because she did an open blog post on her website talking about her displease, her displeasure at the way that Big West was treating Chie Kajira.
Hisame, by the way, is a Basara cosplayer, and she does an amazing, amazing job.
Yeah. And I think we should point out that if we're referring to the same blog post, about half of it was Chie, and then below then it was just more about overall... Like, she pointed out that there were multiple cases, multiple points in how the franchise is run, when there's behind-the-scenes issues...
Right.
Or
so this whole thing about
things that the fans shouldn't need to deal with or be subjected to. She's like, this needs to be dealt with on the business end of things.
Well, Hisame's blog post kind of picked up on that.
Right.
Hisame's blog post, dare I say, is more of a rant than anything. Because she's a very, very hardcore fan. And she was one of the fans that felt betrayed by this decision of the what should be the 20th anniversary concert. To have Chie as a guest was, you know, was a betrayal to the fans. And her idea, Hisame's idea, is okay, fine, just don't call it Firebomber. Call it Basara Night.
Right.
Or if you want to call it Basara Firebomber Basara Explosion, which is the name that they're technically going with, then they should also have Milen Fantasy, which is, you know. Because they've taken Dynamite Explosion and Sweet Fantasy for all of you non-Macro 7 fans.
There's no such thing.
Of course. Max address. That's how I learnt of it.
Right.
And then some of the quotes in that post were taken from the original Chie Kajira blog post, which I read afterwards. And it's... I might not be remembering 100% accurately right now, but I think it's they as in Big West had set up the date, the location, basically the schedule. They'd sorted it out with 3-9 Entertainment, who manages Fukuyama Yoshiki, and then afterwards, after all that, they sent an email to Chie saying, "So, do you want to do it? What do you think?
They approached her after.
Are you in or out?" Yeah.
After everything had been set in stone.
And they didn't like give her any options for dates. They told her, this is the date. Do you want to do it, yes or no? And I don't know if it was a coincidence or not, but she had already put up on the internet that she was going to have a concert the previous day. Like, it's a weekend. This concert, this Firebomber concert, is on a Sunday. She was having her laboratory thing or whatever it was on the Saturday, and so she felt that, well, I'm not going to your thing, you know? That's her first notice when she opened up the email. She said, yeah, I don't think so. I don't deserve this treatment. And then afterwards she thought again, saying, well, you know, it is the 20th anniversary, and I kind of owe it to the fans, blah, blah, blah. So she is going to go. But as we've already talked about it, is a special guest only. And she has already mentioned she will probably be only on stage for 5 minutes or one or two songs, or whatever. Which is not Firebomber in anyone's opinion. And so Hisame's closing statement, if it was her closing statement, I don't remember. It's Otonan no Jijo, these adult circumstances, mm-hmm. right? If they're adults, the fans don't care. You know, it's kind of related to what Tom Bateman was saying before, excuses. The fans don't care about excuses. They want the product. And give them the product that they want.
They shouldn't need to see behind the curtain.
Right.
Yeah. We don't need to see what the Wizard of Oz is doing here. Just show us Oz.
Yes. Right. Exactly. Good.
So that's think it might be interesting to point out this isn't the first time this has happened. Because there was... And I think you were with us, Richard.
Mm.
That cheer gig where... It was the one where... I think it was you. You stayed back afterwards for the merch line and she sang something.
Yeah.
That was the weekend of Kuyama's anniversary gig. And it actually overlapped. Well, he had it for two nights, and it overlapped. And on that one night, there was a cheer gig, a Fukuyama gig, and some sort of fan club theatrical screening.
Right.
And so the fan club hadn't talked to 3-9, and Fukuyama's people, whoever, hadn't talked to cheers people, and we ended up with three events on the one night. Which it just, there is a lack of communication in many
coordination. Like when the for the FB7
that's what I was gonna say.
The main bonus feature where they were doing the medley, mm-hmm. but Main wasn't there because she had her concert that night.
Right. You know? Right.
Yeah, I mean, you got to get your logistics straight.
This is true, and I'm not making excuses here or playing devil's advocate, really, but unlike, you know, a large franchise like, for example, Gundam, I'm sure, you know, Big West is still a relatively small company. We don't have, like, the whole department that, you know, Bandai has to do these, like, theatrical screening festivals and talk shows and getting all the crew and staff out there. It is a much smaller thing, and as such, Tomino
to pretend that he still likes Gundam.
At the same time, though, I mean,
it is a business at the end of the day.
Big West, their product is Macross. They really don't have that much else going. I mean, they are an advertising agency.
Just tell me about their best franchise, the poster.
Gandala?
Yeah.
Gandala. Well, that's kind of dead in the water and has been for about 25 years. So,
Blu-ray box set confirmed.
Screening in Belt Q, maybe.
they have the Southern Cross merchandising rights.
They do.
Yeah, all of the Southern Cross model kits had Big West stickers on them.
Yes. I think we're done talking.
So either
when Southern Cross comes to be mentioned, I think...
Hey, this is the second podcast in a row we've mentioned Southern Cross. Really? Yeah. But yeah, so look, at the end of the day, this is not an ideal situation. I suppose these rights, these issues can be messed up regardless of country and language. But here's hoping that whatever adult circumstances there are, that they'll get mended by whenever the next anniversary is.
June 6th, they did the all-night screening of Do You Remember Love, all six OVAs of Macross 2, and Macross Plus Movie Edition. And for that whole reason, sole reason, purpose of Macross 2, both Cheryl and Jason flew all the way to Japan to be there. Isn't that right?
Yeah, forget Kyoto and forget all that sightseeing. It was all about Metro. That's how we roll.
Yeah. However you want to see it.
They came here. Yeah, they came during the rainy season.
And it has been a very rainy season.
Yeah. Rainy ever since Macross 2 was shown in the theater.
They're saying this might continue until August.
Yeah, August.
The month of August is weeping.
Yeah. So it was the first time we got to see Macross 2 in the theater in Japan.
This is true.
Because over in the U.S., there was a theatrical print that was shown by, U.S. Renditions theatrical print that went to a few art house theaters around the U.S. I don't know if that happened in Europe.
I never heard of that.
Really?
No. Because I don't think that we got it until Manga acquired the U.S. distribution stuff.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
well, they didn't acquire all of it. Some of it went to Kiseki, like Gunbuster.
Mm-hmm.
They got the... It was the same stuff, the same translation, U.S. rendition. So we were a bit behind there.
Yeah.
I don't know about the rest of Europe, but I think the U.K. was... That was the situation in the U.K.
Well, at that time, it was an actual physical print that they showed. And apparently, that is where Big West, or Bandai Visual, they acquired that print to do the Blu-ray masters. So...
Which still doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, and that they got the English Blu-ray...
Because that's not what they said. They said they went back to the negatives.
No. They
I know, but that's what the official...
That's what the commercial says. It's a negative scan, right? Yeah. Scan of the negatives.
It could be a negative of the print.
Yeah,
the print. Yeah, but not the negatives of the actual show itself. But it's the... theatrical print for the U.S. version in English is where they got the scan, from what we've been told.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so this screening was to commemorate this new
Blu-ray box that everyone should order, even though it does not include subs, but who needs subs for Macross 2?
Who needs subs when you have Ishtar?
It might even spoil this one. Yeah.
Because when I first watched it at the Royale, in Lamley's Royale in Santa Monica back in the early 90s, it was painful to sit through.
Yeah. Yeah.
In a theater.
Yeah.
By the fourth episode, I was ready to get out. And I think it's really? Because of the dub.
Mm-hmm.
Because this one probably started about 12:45 in the morning. Almost.
This one, you'd already had to sit through one movie, one 2-hour movie.
So it was, we started off with Do You Remember Love, then all of Macross 2, then Macross Plus Movie Edition. And to give this some context, it was a Friday night. It started about 11 o'clock.
11:30. No.
Yes, it was.
It was 11.
11 o'clock. Yeah. So it would have been, probably around... just after one, maybe, by the time they
start.
But let's compare this to the Macross Plus screenings. Macross Plus screenings were more than one. You could choose which day you wanted to go on.
Right.
Okay, they had like a couple of weekends.
Mm-hmm.
In
many different cities also. This was just a one-time showing. If you couldn't make it to this Friday night viewing, you're screwed. And I had work the next day, so even if I wanted to go, even if I somehow mustered the energy to sit through all that, I had work the next day, so on Saturday, so I couldn't make it.
It was definitely more of a low-key affair than the Plus screens, because with Plus, if you remember, they had all those Plus posters up.
Yeah.
This time they had one poster in the lobby.
Okay, the Plus one... Oh, wait, all the screenings up until now, they gave out clear files.
Right.
All of them.
Yeah.
Nothing. Yeah. They gave nothing.
Yeah.
And all the, on the floor of the theater where all the posters are, nothing.
Well, they gave you visual enjoyment. You should be grateful.
Nothing.
There was nothing. In the first floor of the lobby, there was a poster... for the event. Okay. But it was just a, Kinko's, printed, plotted out on a plotter, on a color plotter printer, printed out. I looked at it, so you can see the plot lines. I'm just,
God.
This is bastards. So, Anyways, but we were late anyways, because we were actually... my birthday was the next day, or actually that day.
No, so basically it hit midnight.
Yeah.
So. We turned into pumpkins, but you got Macross 2 on your birthday.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
On my birthday.
Congratulations.
And I actually walked in... I got there before Gwen, Jason, and Cheryl. I walked in during the Folker Death scene, Do You Remember Love?
Mm.
And...
Another spoon.
Found my spot. And then when the lights went up, well, actually, you guys got there about 10 minutes before. You guys got there right before the big battle.
The stage scene where Mine's looking at Misa and Hikaru.
No, we actually, we got there when Minmei starts hugging Hikaru and Misa walks in.
So we were running late because you guys, well, had just gotten into the country and it was teeming rain. We had to check in first and get to the cinema. But all things considered, you know, I don't know about you, but I know the goal for me was to see Macross 2. So we made it in time.
Everybody hear that? Priorities. Priorities.
Anyways.
So they got in.
What did you think of the actual attendance? Because I thought the cinema was fairly full. It wasn't a huge cinema.
No, it wasn't their biggest theater on... It was their probably second biggest theater for World 9. But it was full. I would say it was only front row seating.
It was pretty packed. I mean...
Yeah, what did you guys think? You walked into this cinema. This is your first movie in Japan, let alone a Macross screening in Japan, let alone a Macross screening of things that are one, 2 decades old. You walk around that corner and you see this room full of people. I mean...
I didn't expect that many people. I expected to walk in and maybe see 30, 40 people.
What?
Come on, man. It's Macross 2.
The harsh reality.
Are you trying to say that you had expected 30, 40 people that all flew in from outside of Japan to watch it?
Yeah. But no, I mean, you walk in, and I think when we first walked in, it was like a dark scene on Do You Remember Love, and all of a sudden, you know, it's bright, and you just turn on, you're just like, oh my gosh, there's all these people here.
Yeah.
So we kind of waddled our way up to the back row, which actually was a really good row, because... You're almost like eye level with the screen,
right?
And the way the theater set up, I mean, there's no heads in front of your face.
Yep, that's why I went for that row.
Yeah, and the World 9 is just really, I think, well planned out that way.
Yeah,
like the seating is really good.
So I take it there was no talk event before this.
There was no talk show. There was no clear files.
Who had the talk show really?
There was like a 10-minute break. Everyone came out, found their seats, and at the starting point, it went up. So the Bandai Visual logo, and then the opening. And the opening was amazing. And you got to see the opening 6 times.
Yep. Yeah, they didn't movie it up. They actually showed each separate episode.
The opening and the closing.
No, I mean, it was... They still showed each individual OVA. So they didn't show the theatrical print, but the footage was scanned from the print.
Okay.
But
the credits are different.
But the point is, the opening looked amazing.
Okay, and you got to see it 6 times.
That's cool, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, every like 40 minutes you got to wake up and go and sing along.
Actually, that is true.
That's true.
I was dead tired. I think I watched the first episode all the way through just because I had to. I had to watch and see like how good it was. And then somewhere within the second episode I was out. But every time I would hear that, I was like, what? And I'd watch it, and then I'd go back to sleep.
So how was episode 3, Adrian?
Well, oh, God. Okay.
The blue one.
First of all, the overall quality, I think, like, we really could see how much better it looked. Like, not just the opening, but overall.
Even the first episode, just as it starts, the whole, you know...
Do, 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 do,
yeah.
Do.
Yeah, or... Excuse me. Like, call it, you know, and Mickey gets hit, and then Super Nina walks by his assistant.
Oh, my God.
Da-da! Da-da!
Everything looked great.
I'm so glad I have that on order on Blu-ray. That's going to be my new background noise.
Oh, Dennis floating. Dennis's body floating across the screen. It looked amazing. It was just amazing.
How about that end credit sequence with the pan on Ishtar?
Ishtar's ass.
Because you got to see that six times too.
Yes. Yes, I did. That's something to nod back off to.
Okay, Jason fell asleep every so often. What about you, Adrian?
I was awake the whole time. Oh, I didn't fall asleep once. I was just
ecstatic.
Yes.
Now, what was the difference? Because when you saw it in the US back in the day, did you get sleepy or was it just that it was...
Oh, I slept through the whole thing. It just got really boring really quick.
So what was the difference?
It's the dub. It's the English dub that puts you to sleep.
Really?
Yeah.
No, well, for me it's not, because it doesn't matter, like, when I'm watching it, what time of day, how much sleep I've gotten, or anything. If I'm trying to watch all of Macross 2 in one sitting, which I've tried to do a couple times, always around episode 4 I start getting sleepy.
Yeah, but
I don't know why.
You have one option. Outside of a theater, and that is a remote control.
Yeah,
you can pause it. Yeah. You can stop it. You can switch a tape. But once you've paid probably $8 at the time to sit through that movie, there's no stopping.
Yeah,
you can just leave, and then you miss it.
Right.
But it was the dub. I thought for me when I saw it in the theater, the dub killed it.
Mm-hmm.
But this time around,
well, it was in Japanese, the original dub, the English Japanese dub. So it was great. I've heard. You comment in the past that the dub's actually not that good in Japanese.
I think you said. I wouldn't disagree with that.
Did I say that?
Yeah, I think so. You kind of like jokingly say like...
I'll watch it again for the first time this decade.
It doesn't really have any famous voice actors in it,
does it? Macross Productions seldom do have famous voice actors. I think
Kamiyakia?
Yeah.
Seldom, not never. But I believe that in the case of 2, like, I think in this case, the Japanese version lacks the corniness of the English version, but is delivered better. But comparing it to other Japanese, like, good performance anime dubs, it does fall short. It's not a brilliant cast, but it is better than the English one.
Yeah.
I think is how I'd put it. But it definitely looked crisp.
Well, that's because the English one was localized for the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a bunch of added dialogue where people didn't say anything.
Bromance.
Like, well, the whole, excuse me, like, that didn't happen. She just walks out of the way. She didn't even say anything.
Right.
I was actually really surprised at how much the musical cues...
Can you spare the time?
The musical cues really got me, because the first time I'd watched it in Japanese in quite a while... And in my head, naturally, I think everyone had a part of that dub going in their heads while watching the Japanese, because that's the first time, I think the first version most people see is that English version, but...
Well, for a long time, it wasn't until manga got a hold of it, which would have been like mid to late 90s, the dub was the only thing available.
Right.
They didn't, like, you know...
Although, the first time I actually saw it was in Japanese.
Which is ironic.
In Japan.
Right.
But in my head, I had some of those dub lines going, but then it's like, it was the musical cues. I knew, I was just remembering exactly what was going to happen, because the music in that show, while I don't think it's the best Macross soundtrack or anything like that, it's just very distinctive. Yes, it's very Evangelion, but it's also just very distinctive. Like,
it's, you get a good cue score.
And you'd know exactly what was going to come up next. But, I remember this, you know.
Oh, to answer your question, no, it had no celebrity voice actors.
Right.
Because who cares about Amuro Ray from Gundam, right?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he played Feff.
He played Feff?
Yeah,
he did.
Oh my god.
That's right. I forgot about that. Okay.
Yeah. So probably.
Feffu ikimasu!
So probably, if you think about it, everyone there was probably just to hear his voice.
I was going to say that it wasn't until manga brought out the movie that people saw the Japanese dub.
Right. Yeah.
But in the UK, it was the opposite, because, like I said, manga acquired the US renditions dub and released that, and no one ever released the original Japanese version. So, again, I got that from the US.
Okay.
My copy.
And it was kind of strange to me, because I had gotten used to years of listening to Can You Spare the Time?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, most people did. I was really annoyed that they didn't come out with a subtitled version at first, because yeah. I saw the dub, and I was just like, this is not good.
Because you as Renditions have done subtitled versions of other stuff, so why did they...
Yeah, there were certain things, like Gunbuster, they only came out with the subtitled one,
right.
But Macross 2 and Orgus, they only came out with dubs.
When they screened them at the cons in the beginning, they were just the raw Japanese.
Oh, really?
Because that's all they had, and they were promoting that it was coming out in English.
Right.
But, and that was kind of the era before they were doing the sub-dub tape versions.
Right.
ADV used to do the $19 dub.
And then the $30 sub. Yeah.
But, the localized, dub version is way different. Just the way they make the voices, because there's the guy that goes, "What have you done to the emulator?" The actual Japanese character is just Master Feth, blah, 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 blah. he's just a very confident speaker. "What have you done to the emulator?"
I'll be honest, this is the first time I've seen it in Japanese.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, okay.
And so, I've gotten so used to that. I mean, for the longest time, we would turn it into a drinking game where we would just get drunk and try and imitate every line after they say it. And it's great. You at least have to try it once.
Okay.
But yeah, we'll record it when we do.
You have to.
So yeah, it's a lot different watching it in Japanese, even though there's no subs. It seems a little bit easier to swallow from start to finish, but you can't stop it. And everything looked good from the first episode. Second episode looked good. When it got to the third episode, the animation quality dropped in general, like whether it was character animation, mechanical stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It just drops a little bit
on
episode 3 where they get to the moon.
But was it blue?
Yeah, that's the question.
I was paying attention to that because, Renato, you had showed me, you pulled my DVDs out and like, see? In this coming scene, like, it's perfectly done, but in the show, like, during the interrogation, he's blue or red is blue. That scene did not have that blue.
Yeah.
And it shows, like, all the ships, too, where it was blue. So it seems fixed.
Well, that pleases me.
But it's probably not fixed to the extent you want it fixed. You're going to find something, I'm sure.
Well, even if you look at Macross Chronicle for that, like, in the episode sheets, for that episode, you can see how blue it is.
Well, it's just, those are just screen caps.
Right.
We're just going to rename it Macross Blue, all
right? Right.
Blubbers again.
It looked good, I thought. I didn't really notice any of that blue hue. Yeah. When you showed it to me, it's there.
It's noticeable.
But watching it in the theater, I didn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
Episodes 4 and 5 looked great. Not because of the Blu-ray, but just the animation in episodes 4 and 5. Episode 4, all the character line art, all the animation for the characters was really sharp and clear.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of detail. The only thing that kind of seemed weird was the character style changed
at that point.
And it felt like you're watching like Fatal Fury and you're waiting for Krauser to come in because it goes to that Obari style opposed to a Mikimoto style
characters.
Well,
the answers to the people are different.
Yeah.
But
it was definitely a different type of characters. Even though they're the same character, Feff started looking more like a Voltage Fighter, Kalgeiser,
kind of
like looking character.
I hadn't noticed that before watching the DVD, but in between waking up and seeing the screen later on, that kind of hit me. I kind of noticed that. I was like, wait, these characters, they don't look quite the same. They kind of look like they got, some facial work done, and I was just like, what happened?
But episode 4, the characters look really good. Episode 5, the space battles look really good, especially on the screen. And there was these really nice angles of all the ships and stuff coming out of dock. Or there's the scene where it's the camera's looking up at the metal siren kind of coming up on the launch arm, and it's this really long pan shot. Beautiful scenes, beautiful. So episodes 4 and 5 alone, should buy the Blu-ray just to watch those.
What about episode 6?
Episode 3 looked really good. Even though the drop in quality, but episode 6 is just horrible.
Yeah, yeah.
There's nothing Blu-ray could do for that. It's not a restoration or anything. Just every frame of the final episode was pretty bad, blown up that big.
Right.
And it's not because it's blown up. It's when it was animated, it looked that bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But the final scene where she's singing is okay, isn't it?
No. It's okay, but they don't do anything. They don't even turn the battleships around to fire at the Ingus. Like, they just shoot backwards. Have you noticed that?
I don't remember that.
Feff's ship turns around. He's the only ship that turns around.
Oh my god.
But when they attack the Ingus, they're just firing backwards.
Okay, that's laziness. I just remember that first, the opening battle in the sixth episode, which was drawn, like, with crayons, it must have been, because it was such horrible. The fairy squadron, where they're like, pew, 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 pew.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty bad. Especially when you know, 5 minutes ago, you were watching awesome space battles.
And episode 5, they bring in the metal siren. It looks really cool. But then they continue the metal siren in episode 6, and it looks like
crap. And it looks like, yeah.
It looks like a bunch of blocks. Like, it's really badly made. The characters look really bad.
I'm really looking forward to this
movie. Yeah. After Nex goes... when Nex gets recalled to, you know, basically command the was it Macross Cannon?
Yeah, that was weird.
So he goes... When he, like, you know, says, fire! It's, like, this big face in the screen, and his sideburns are these big, curly, like, bushes. Like, like, it's like Rose of Versailles all of a sudden.
He's a bidanshi.
Yeah, so... It got pretty messy in the end.
But. Yeah, overall, you could see the remaster. Like, it was... The increase in quality was evident. This is the best it will look. In some respects, and I don't want to say this, but I will, it's a better remastering job than Do You Remember Love, because there's none of those blurry shots.
Mm-hmm. But that's probably...
That comes with the material. Like, it couldn't be helped.
Yeah, it's because the way it was shot.
Subtitles, right?
Not just that. Yeah. It was the way it was shot.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But there was none of that. This was pristine, regardless of what the animation quality was like. The quality was pristine all the way through, so it was really good. And to return to the topic of, you know, posters and whatnot, I think the deciding factor there was, if you think about it, when Plus came out, they revealed the box art, that new Tengen shot that he'd done. Nothing's been revealed for the Macross 2 box set yet.
That's because the box art for Plus was done by Hidetaka Tengen, and who knows about scheduling, and this one is being done by Haruhiko Mikimoto, who is late on every single deadline he has ever had.
So,
although I love him, that guy, he's late every time.
Yeah, so we don't have that key image to do posters of, so...
Yeah, if we did, maybe you would have gotten your clear file.
Yeah. Great. It's a shame.
So the next signing, I'm going to look at them all.
Look a little faster, huh? I see you're not drawing noses anymore. Doesn't that kind of...
But you know what he could have put on that clear file? A bold Ishtar. Because you had something with you in the cinema, I noticed.
Yeah, I brought a bunch of... The week before that, on Yahoo Auctions, somebody put up all the opening for the Macross 2 opening animation, all the Ishtar scenes from the opening, Genga and the Dogas. And I bought them. I won them.
The Genga and the Dogas, by the way, are the original keyframe art, and in between the pencil lines, people would trace over and then paint in as cells. So these are the original hand-drawn pencil drawings that made the screen, basically. Let's hold them up to the microphone so that our listeners can see.
That's a big stack of
get
paper.
Get a transcript of that.
Big chance.
Should we... Can we ask how much this cost?
Well, these were three separate auctions. that went up at the same time.
There's some black paper. Is that like
there's
carbon?
There's some cells in here, but it's just the back black. It's probably the. I can't remember what they're called.
Anyway,
yeah. These were three separate auctions ending 5 minutes from each other.
Okay. Right?
And I believe. In total, I spent about. Hachimaya.
That's not so bad.
No. Yeah, no, that's not.
Considering that one sale of Minmay goes for like 350,000.
Yes.
You want to translate these costs, Renato?
What's
a man? Did he pay 8 men for this?
No, he paid about 800 US dollars.
About 800 US dollars.
A man is 10,000 yen.
Yeah.
Which is so about 100 bucks.
About 100 bucks. Yeah.
Well, whatever, because, you know, it changes depending on when you're listening to this podcast.
So well, it doesn't change that much.
Right.
And my budget, like, my limit would have been a grand, but I probably would have went higher. But luckily, no one bid against me.
Really?
Nobody bid
Someone
against
on the boards
me.
Was asleep that night, apparently.
Yeah, probably. And
that is really shocking to me. I would think, because the like you said, Jason, the theater was full, right?
Yeah.
Someone wants to. Someone cares about Magnus 2, surely.
I do.
Yeah, I know you do.
Well, that's why we flew all the way over here.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's so interesting. So, this is a really good deal. I'm very proud that you got.
Yeah.
What you wanted with
it's
animated hair.
Yeah, it's
cousin it.
There's bald Ishtar and then there's
long
her hair.
Long hair, animated hair. That's what I
So
really
now you can
for.
Just have the long hair, you don't even need the Ishtar.
Yeah.
It's just a page with the hair on.
So I won those about the week prior and I took a couple of choice shots out of it and brought them with me to the screening, even though I was late. So I didn't really get them to show to anybody.
Yeah, it was kind of dark.
Yeah.
And we should make a point that we left after Macross 2 because we had stuff to get done. Didn't stick around for the Plus screen, but we'd seen Plus previously. And now the Blu-rays are out, so the whole thing about the 2 screen was getting to see these things before they hit the street, you know.
Yeah.
But, so Jason and Cheryl, I mean, apart from
falling
napping,
asleep.
any impressions from 2?
I'll let you go first.
I napped through a good part of it, but the animation, the clarity, the brightness of color, it was pretty amazing. And I never saw Macross 2 and Westwood in the theater. My limit was on VHS on a 30-inch screen, 32-inch screen. So just going to a regular movie theater and seeing it jam-packed was pretty amazing. For me.
Yeah. For me, I originally had no intention of buying the Blu-ray just because, you know, I've seen it enough times. I have the dub. You know, I know what they're saying. But after watching it in the theater, hearing the sound and the video, I mean, it just... You can tell they put a lot of work into it, you know, especially being as old as it is. And I'm actually probably going to change my mind and pick it up. It's that good.
Right. Well, you could trade in your FB7 Blu-ray.
Well, that might cut $6 off of the price.
$6 credit, well worth exchange.
I've realized something.
Yes.
We have all of the key art here. We also have the time sheets here. Ooh. We could redo the anime opening of Macross 2. Just give me a
well, the Ishtar scenes from it. Not
oh, is this the only?
It's only the Ishtar scenes.
Is it?
Yeah, I only have the Ishtar scenes.
It's not the entire opening. There's no Hibiki in there.
Oh well.
Speaking of which, so there was no talk show. However, when the screening for Macross 2 finished, there was suddenly a voice that burst over the PA system. And there was a message for the viewers there.
Okay.
And it was actually a message by Stormu Takayama, Hibiki's voice actor.
Okay.
And he had a message for the crowd, and he was basically saying that, you know, he was asking what everyone thought of it. He said he'd watched it as well, and that he was personally really surprised by the quality
of the HD remaster of the scan. Mm-hmm. He said he didn't think he'd ever actually see it in this quality, and that now we have a Blu-ray box set. It's in this amazing quality. We can no longer refer to Macross 2 as the black history of Macross, which is what it's common. That's a common joke, right?
Yeah.
It's the black history of Macross.
But, like, I think that someone mentioned that term is originally from Gundam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's from Turn A.
And a lot of people don't know that it's from Gundam these days.
Right. But he was kind of, you know, dispelling this old gag in a way, and everyone got a good laugh out of it. But yeah, so he spoke for maybe a couple of minutes on this pre-recorded message. It was kind of a nice touch. It would have been better if he had been there in person, of course.
Mm.
But I guess looking at the way they structured it, unlike the Macross Plus screening, he would have had to have been there, you know, in between the Do You Remember Love and the Macross 2, so he would have had to have been at like 1 or 2 in the morning. Whereas if they have played Macross 2 first, I suppose they would have had to have held it half hour earlier at least. So the timing just didn't work out. But it was something. It was something. And I've seen very little promotional material for Macross 2 that's like relatively new with any of the cast coming back. The only person who does anything is Kasahara. For Ishtar, who narrated the TV commercials for the Blu-ray box set. That was the first time she'd been recorded doing Ishtar since probably the PSP games, if that was original voice work.
A little bit was.
So, you know, that's, I'm glad she still, you know, is coming back and doing the character, and we got some new Hibiki there as well, so it was something.
Yeah. Well, lucky for these guys, when they got into the theater, you guys got to see Ishtar with long hair, fell asleep, and that's all you got to see was Ishtar with long hair.
Like, that was good enough for me.
But you got to see, you know, the last, what, 20 minutes, half hour? Do you remember
that?
Yeah,
that was great. You got to see the final battle? I woke up for the final battle of Macross 2.
Yeah, you know what the sad part was?
What?
And I knew it was coming. Because you guys got there for the end of Do You Remember Love. Credits roll. Movie finishes. Everyone claps. Macross 2, last episode. Credits roll. Lights come up. Everyone goes to the lobby.
That is true.
That was kind of sad. I so wanted to clap, but
didn't we? Well, how come we did it?
I don't think we clapped. No,
it would have been the single solitary.
You're the ultimate.
Yeah, you gotta do that whole like. And then stand up and
a crescendo,
and then it starts going fast, and you're like, woo!
Well, I've got to admit, everyone was more exhausted after 2 than I'd seen them after any other Macross screening, because it's such a long chunk of time to be in that cinema. Plus, everyone in that cinema was soaking wet.
Yeah, we were all soaking wet.
So. Yeah.
From seeing long-haired Ishtar, and it was also raining. Atatakana no omoide wa yume no kakera yubi no sukima kobore ochi.
I am going to be leaving Japan pretty soon, so this is probably my last live appearance on the podcast. I mean, I'm sure like we'll do Skype stuff or things, but so I'm not going to be here anymore. I'll probably be back at some point. I don't think I'm going to be gone from Japan permanently. But there's some family issues and things to take care of, so I'm heading home for now. But So I just wanted to say, for everyone, thanks for listening. And Gwen?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I'm sorry, but I cannot return your feelings. Adrian, this is probably coming a little bit late, but I...
So the question is, did Richard live? Did Richard live or did he warp out in time? That depends which version of Richard you watch.
You're in charge of
my heart.
I'm gonna be very sad to see Richard go. If not for the fact that there's no one else that laughs at my jokes on this podcast.
Wait, you make jokes?
There you go. So we need a.
But no, I mean
we need some canned laughter recorded from Richard and sent over from LA.
I mean, yeah, I think that we'll definitely try and get something going with Skype here and there when we can. I mean, Richard's contributions both for the written stuff that he translates, his knowledge with written material, and of course musical background, always giving some type of context to what happens with Macross music at any period in time, is something that's always welcome and is really interesting. So
I'm actually kind of thinking, like, if I'm going to be back home, I might just work out some kind of panel for anime conventions talking about stuff like that. Like, I was thinking kind of focusing on the Macross stuff that most Western fans never really get a chance to experience, like the novels and the drama albums and things like that.
Yeah, nice to go with that.
Okay.
Cool. All right, well, Richard, you will be sorely missed. I hope, you know, your fold back home goes successful. There's no Vajra attacks on the way or anything like that. But on that note, would you like to sign us off?
Yeah. Again, thanks everyone. And folding out.
I forgot the rest of it.
It's still C.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We got one more. Do you want to see the chords here?
Oh, that was
A, C, A, M, A minor.
This into one song. I mean, I can just fade it out.
This is fine. You can just put this in there. It doesn't have to be
a perfect performance.
It's
not perfect memory, man.
Perfect memory.
Do you want to take it from... That's the...
I need to get a copy of that.
That's let's... No, no, no. Because we have to build up to this. So why don't we start at Shinjite? So it's like...
Okay.
G, A minor. Shinjite ita mono ga aru. Takada to yuwareta keredo. My VF-19 broke.
What?
Yeah, snapped clean off at the elbow.
Oh wait, you're the guy that breaks everything, huh?
Yeah.
Oh god.